Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 10, verse number 8. This is a very most sublime chapter, actually. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Isn't it a fact?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Adhyatmika
Ayam Purusha Sa Asau Eva Adhidhaimaka Ya Tatra Ubhaya Vichayda Purusha Hi Adhibhautika Yajatmika Yam Purusha Sausab Eva Didaivika Yastatra Vaya Vichayda Purusha Yajatmibhautika Yaha
One who
Adhyatmika
is possessed of the sense organs.
Ayam,
this Purusha, personality. Sa, he.
Asau,
that. Eva, also. Adhidhaivika, controlling deity. Ya, that which. Tatra, there. Ubhaya, of both. Vichcheda, separation. Purusha, person. He, for. Adhibhautika, the visible body or the embodied living entity. Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, my Savior. The individual person possessing different instruments of senses is called the adhyatmic person, and the individual controlling deity of the senses is called adhidaivik. The embodiment seen on the eyeballs is called the adhibhautik person. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The supreme controlling samambhana is the personality of Godhead in His plenary portion of Paramatma, or the Super Soul Manifestation. In the Bhagavad Gita, 10:42, it is said, Atava bahunaitena kingyatena tavarjuna vishtabhyayam idam krishnam ekam kshena stito jagat. All the controlling deities like Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva are different manifestations of the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who exhibits Himself in such manners by entering into each and every universe generated from Him. But still, apparently, there are divisions of the controller and the controlled. For example, in the food controlling department, the controller of food is a person made of the same ingredients as the person who is controlled. Similarly, each and every individual in the material world is controlled by the higher demigods, For example, we have our senses, but the senses are controlled by superior controlling deities. We cannot see without light, and the supreme controller of light is the sun. The sun god is in the sun planet, and we, the individual human beings, or any other being on this earth, are all controlled by the sun god as far as our eyes are concerned. Similarly, all the senses we have are controlled by the superior demigods, who are also as much living entities as we are. But one is empowered, while the other is controlled. The controlled living entity is called the atmic person, and the controller is called the adidaivic person. All these positions in the material world are due to different fruitive activities. Any individual living being can become the sun god, or even Brahma, or any other god in the upper planetary system by a higher grade of pious work. And similarly, one becomes controlled by the higher demigods by lower grades of fruitive activities. So every individual living entity is subject to the supreme control of the Paramatma, who puts everyone in different positions of the controller and the controlled. That which distinguishes the controller and the controlled, that is, the material body, is called the adibhautik purusha. The body is sometimes called purusha, as confirmed in the Vedas in the following hymn, sava esha purushonna rasammayaha. This body is called the anna-rasa embodiment. This body depends on food. The living entity which is embodied does not eat anything, however, because the owner is spirit in essence. The material body requires replacement of matter for the wearing and tearing of the mechanical body. Therefore, the distinction between the individual living entity and the controlling planetary deities is in the anna-rasamaya body. The sun may have a gigantic body, and the man may have a smaller body. But all these visible bodies are made of matter. Nonetheless, the sun god and the individual person, who are related as the controller and the controlled, are the same spiritual parts and parcels of the Supreme Being. And it is the Supreme Being who places different parts and parcels in different positions. And thus the conclusion is that the Supreme Person is the shelter of all. Om Jnana Timidam Dasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, after all of this detailed knowledge about the controllers and the controlled within this material world, what is the final conclusion? That the Supreme Person is the shelter of all. So it doesn't matter if you're a big man or you're a little man. It doesn't matter if you're the sun god or you're just an ordinary jiva walking around Miami. Everyone is in the same position in this material world. So the point is, it's not worth making such a big endeavor to elevate one's status within this material world. The karmis are working. How I can elevate my status within this material world? Some are working blindly just according to the, you know, system of working up the corporate ladder, expanding their business. Others are following the Vedic system. They want to become elevated to the heavenly planets. But actually it's the same mentality. One is more enlightened, a little bit more enlightened than the other. But actually it's the same mentality. But I'm trying to elevate myself through, you know, economic development or through the Vedic system. There's no difference. Of course, when we say elevation, we are speaking of material elevation. Those persons who are actually intelligent, Those persons, Bhagavatam says, who are philosophically inclined did not endeavor to that purposeful end, which is achieved by moving around this material world. They endeavor for that end, which is completely beyond this material existence. This is the intelligent position. Why should I labor so hard either to the Vedic system or the economic system for material elevation? It really doesn't make sense. It's just stupid thing to do. Completely stupid, asinine thing to do. Rather, we should put our energies into realizing, who am I? Atato brahma jikyasa. We've actually been through all those big, big positions and we weren't satisfied. It's amazing that Prabhupada actually explains in this purport in the Bhagavatam, the first birth every living entity takes in this world is Brahma. To think that we were up there, that, you know, four heads and controlling the whole universe, and we just carried away by sense gratification. And now here we are, you know, struggling on this planet. The point is, there's no position in this material world that's worth it. Abhrama bhuvana loka punaravartinarjuna mamupechita konteya punarjanmanabhijite. There's no position worth it. Nothing. Nothing worth it. You should simply try to come to understand, who am I? Where have I come from? What is my actual identity? What is my destination? How do I get there? You see? This is intelligent. This intelligence we did not have. We did not have such intelligence. But by the causeless mercy of that greatest of all spiritual masters, the divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we have gotten, by his mercy, by his compassion, by his loving care, he cared enough to leave Vrindavan, to come here to this god-awful place where it's hell going on in all directions. He cared enough to come here to give us intelligence in the form of these wonderful books, in the form of the holy names, in the form of the deity worship and the prasadam, all the wonderful aspects of this movement. This is Prabhupada's great, great, great compassion upon us fallen souls who are struggling like anything. Birth after birth, struggling in this situation, struggling in that situation, never finding satisfaction. This is the purity of such an exalted personality of Srila Prabhupada. He had no selfish motive, not even the tinge of selfish motive that he had. He simply wanted to give us the sweet mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. So, if we can understand by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada that we really, really, really have no shelter in any kind of material arrangement. None. And we can simply focus on our actual duty is to reestablish, which is to reestablish our loving relationship with that supreme, beautiful, sublime, magnificent, almighty Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, Krishna is there, and to expand his enjoyment, as he explains in Bhagavad Gita, aham sarvasya prabhavo mataksarvam vivartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So Krishna, to expand his own enjoyment, he is expanding countless jivas. He has his integrated expansion, the Vishnu Tattva. And he has the separated expansion, the Jiva Tattva. Simply to increase the rasa, his happiness. He is expanding all of these countless integrated and separated expansions from himself. So the real reason, the only reason we exist, is simply to have a loving relationship with Krishna. We have no other reason to exist. We concoct so many other things by the influence of material nature, but these are simply artificial, complete artificial things we've imagined to be our purpose for existence. So we have to come out of the insanity of this imagined so-called reality. We have to come back to understanding, who am I? What is my purpose for existing? I exist simply for the purpose of loving that supreme, all-attractive person, Lord Sri Krishna. He's emanating me so that I can love him and serve him. He has given me the free choice to love him or to leave him, because if choice does not exist, love cannot exist. Many people ask me, I have this e-course, we're corresponding with people all over the world. We're getting so many questions every day from all over the world. One of the most popular questions we're asked is, why would someone leave the spiritual world? It's so wonderful. Who would want to give it up? Why, or they also say, why doesn't God just bring everyone back? Why does he let them suffer here? What's his problem? They want to blame God. Why he doesn't just bring everyone back to his kingdom? Why does he let them languish in the modes of material nature? Actually, love cannot exist unless it is voluntary. If I put a gun in your head and I say, you better be kind to me or I'm going to pull the trigger, will you feel? Of course, a Vaishnava is so transcendental, he might be able to, you know, he could give love, genuine love to anyone. But the ordinary person, if you put a gun at their head and said, love me or I'll shoot, they're not going to love you at all. They may feign love to save their life, but they're not going to feel kindness in their heart for you if you're threatening them with a gun, isn't it? So, if you actually want to inspire someone to love you, then you love them without any condition. You see, real love means no conditions. I simply give you my loving kindness, and then whatever comes back, that's your free will. So that is our relationship with the Supreme Lord. He does not force that you have to bow down to me, you have to love me. No. He says you can love me or you can leave me. But, of course, he does not want us to leave. We are actually very dear to Krishna. We are his children. He does not want us to leave. So if we choose to leave, then he has to make some arrangement that we'll be attracted, impelled, to come back to him. Therefore we find a material world, which is a miserable place. One can have the false sense of enjoyment here that, you know, I'm the star of the show, and everyone else is my supporting actor. You see, Krishna will give you that illusion that you're the star of the show, that I'm the star of the show. And everyone else is just meant to, you know, support me in my stardom. But the real fact is, Krishna is the star of the show, and we are simply we are his cast, his supporting actors. We are meant to do our activities in such a way that Krishna becomes more and more prominent, more and more of a big star. That we want to steal the spotlight from the Lord. We want to upstage Krishna. And that is not allowed in the spiritual world. So we want to upstage the Lord, then we have to come here. Now we can take, in our own mind anyway, we are taking the center stage. thinking that, yes, I'm the center of everything. Everything revolves around me. So for some time, Krishna will, he will let us, actually, as long as we want. As long as we want to try to enjoy that false sense of being the center of everything that exists, he will allow us to continue in that foolish, selfish mode, that we're very stubborn. We can go on for millions of kalpas, thinking that we're the center of everything that exists. Prabhupada gives the example of a little girl. She's looking at the moon, and she's wanting the moon. Can a mother give the moon to the little girl? Is that possible? Jai Gaurikai Shishi Krishna Kadanam Bhavana Subhadra Ki Jai. Is it possible that the mother can give the moon to the little girl? No way. The mother doesn't have the power to give the moon to the little girl. But the mother can hand the little girl a mirror in which she is holding the moon. She's thinking, ah yes, now I have the moon. Thank you, mother. Now I have the moon. So Krishna is giving us the illusion that we are God, that we are the center of everything that exists. But do we actually have the moon in our hand? No. Simply a mirror, that's all. So we are holding on to that maya, because that maya makes us think that yes, I am essential, I am great. But the bottom line is, we're nowhere as long as we remain in that illusion. Just imagine some astronaut, just like they had a launching under. Some astronaut shot into outer space in a capsule, and then something goes wrong with the capsule, and he has to, you know, exit the capsule out there in outer space. And somehow he gets disconnected, his radio goes dead, and there's nothing. He's just floating in outer space with a limited supply of oxygen. Just imagine what kind of position that would be, floating in outer space. NASA doesn't know where you are. You don't know where you are. There's nothing you can do. You're just floating there in outer space, waiting for death to take you. That is our position, this material world. Whereabouts unknown. We think we know where we are. We give it names, Miami, Florida, USA. But actually, we're floating in this material existence. It's drifting, this material existence, by the influence of the modes of nature. With no shelter. No shelter. This is all imagined shelter. You say, yes, I am protected. I am in America. I'm safe. Of course, 9-1-1 kind of popped that bubble. But still, we are thinking, yes, I am secure, I am safe. Actually, there's no safe place in this material existence. Not a safe place at all. It's simply a place for ruffians. There's no safe place here. We're never protected here, safe. It's always a very, very dangerous situation. At any minute, death can come and finish us off. At any second, it can come. Therefore, we must be very, very, very vigilant to always fix our mind in pure Krishna consciousness. Take complete shelter of our spiritual master. Take complete shelter of the holy name. Take complete shelter of these wonderful, wonderful books of Srila Prabhupada. In this way, we fully dedicate ourselves to being Krishna conscious at every minute. Then we are always protected. We are never in any danger. Always protected. We're always safe. We're always sheltered. So the shelter is there. The perfect shelter is there. You simply have to become expert at taking advantage of it. What is pulling us away from that shelter? Mano Vrata. It's like we have Vrata Yatra, there's Mano Vrata, also the chariot of the mind, dragging us away from Krishna consciousness. Therefore, our Param Guru, that great Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he says, when you get up in the morning, you go to the shoe rack, and you grab one pair of shoes, and what do? You beat your mind one other time with the shoe. You let the mind know who is boss. And in the evening time, then you find that broom closet down the hall, you grab that broom 100 times, beat them up. So we have to stop that mind from its ceaseless wandering in this material nature. We have to bring the mind under control. Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astaram. From whatever and wherever that mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly grab it and bring it back under the control of the self. If we can do that, if we can bring that rascal mind and subdue it, you know what will happen? That mind will actually become our friend. Bhakta mind. See, we've got to get our mind, we have to be our own bhakta, have our own bhakta program, and recruit that rascal asura, the mind, and bring it into the bhakta program, bhakta mind. Vajavure mana shrinamanadana abhaya charanana nindare Durlava Mahavasam. This way. We have to bring that mind. We have to say, my dear mind, why are you running here and there on Miami Beach? Why don't you engage yourself in the service of the Divine Son of Maharaj Mahavasam, that beautiful cowherd boy, that sublime flute player? Why don't you serve him? Why are you running here, chasing women, chasing money, chasing name and fame in this material world? Don't you know, my dear mind, that the sweetest nectar is the lotus feet of that Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's where you should come. And this way we have to recruit the mind to our bhakta program, so he doesn't keep wandering around in the streets of Coconut Grove looking for sense enjoyment. So this is our very sublime process that Prabhupada has handed to us practically on a golden platter. He has given us this process. With so much love, with so much kindness, with so much compassion, Prabhupada has just given this to us. We were so unqualified actually to receive it. But how much Prabhupada has blessed us. Actually, we can't even conceive of how fortunate we are to receive this mercy from Srila Prabhupada. And in spite of our dull-headedness, in spite of the fact that we don't really realize how fortunate we are, we should just dutifully follow the instructions that Prabhupada has given us. As much as possible, read the books, chant Hare Krishna, and preach. This is what Prabhupada told Vinayananda Maharshi. Wonderful instruction. He said, as much as possible, read, chant, and preach. If you do so, then very soon this Krishna consciousness will be the only religion in the world. Now, do you think that was some... Prabhupada was just trying to fire us up and just giving us some hype? Or is it really true that this Krishna conscious movement can make a revolution on this planet? Viplavaha, Sanskrit. Is it possible? Of course it's possible. This is Prabhupada is not going to simply give us some pep talk, some hype. If he says that by reading, chanting, and preaching, by absorbing ourselves in these activities of reading, chanting, and preaching, if this Krishna consciousness movement can inundate the world, it is a fact. It's an absolute fact. And if it's not happening, it just means that we are not absorbed enough in what the instruction that the Prabhupada has given us. That's all. We simply have to deepen our absorption in reading, chanting, preaching, serving, etc. If we do that, it's an absolute fact that we will see how this Krishna consciousness movement will capture everyone in this planet. We will see it. Or the future generations will see. But it will happen. It will happen. So anyway, we're very happy to be blessed by your Sangha. It's our very great fortune, good fortune that you allowed us to come into this temple. In spite of our innumerable disqualifications, your blessing is that we can be here to get the mercy of your divine presences. So, if there's any questions, we can try to answer them. Everything is fully understood. There's no question. Yes. There's so many, did you say problems? Yeah. So, yeah, being half, being somewhat hard of hearing and acoustics being rather echoey. Let's see if I understood what you were asking. With so many problems, what can you do to deal successfully with solving the problem? Is that?
Should we just follow our sadhana? Should we just practice our sadhana? Or what can we do?
So we just forget about the problems and, you know, stick our nose in this, you know. That's right. We have two things going on here, as Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam purport. Bahirna Singha, Hridayena Singha. It's a two-fold system, actually. On one hand, we're doing the internal purification, Hridayena Singha. On the other hand, we're doing the external upliftment. That's Bahirna Singha. So those two things actually complement each other. The more we can focus on purifying our absorption in the holy names, you know, purifying our relationships with the devotees, all of those things that's, you know, our own internal cleansing. The more we do that, the more we will naturally have potency to attract more and more people to join this movement. You see, so on the one hand, by focusing on the internal, then the external things will automatically come up. And then conversely, by focusing on the external things, you know, fixing the leaky roof, you know, getting the books out there in large numbers, getting the holy names out there, preaching programs, you know, managing the finances, you know, by focusing the nice deity worship going on, all these activities that we have to do, if we do those very nicely, then naturally the heart is becoming cleansed. So those two things, we can work the system from both ends. The internal purification, the external activities. So they work hand in hand. Both things complement each other. So we, especially in the early morning hours, we should very much focus on the internal cleansing, our own, you know, learning shlokas, absorbing ourselves in prayer, going deeply into the holy names. In this way, internally focusing on the internal, and then Once the day gets rolling, then we have so many big projects to expertly conduct those activities. So both things are there, the internal, Bahirna Singha, Hridayena Singha. We want the Singha manifest within and without. So So we do both activities. Nice balance of both of them. Train runs on two tracks. Do they hear in a signal or do they hear in a signal? Anything else? Why it's not working? Yeah. Well, the process does not work if you don't work the process. Actually, it's a real simple thing. This process works if you work the process. The process works. You'll become an enlightened spiritual being if you work this process. As it's actually given by Prabhupada. The process works if you work the process. If I'm not becoming that spiritually enlightened being, that purified soul who can experience Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna, then I'm doing something wrong. You see? So we really have to just go back to that. We have that list, the 10 offenses. Because Prabhupada gave us everything we needed to realize Krishna perfectly and fully and completely. The initiation ceremony, he gave us the beads, he gave us the mantra, 16 rounds at least, he gave us the four principles, and he would make sure an explanation was given of the 10 offenses. Someone says, well, I've been following the four rules, chanting 16 rounds, and not getting the result, the process must not work. That means you forgot about the 10 offenses. We have to see how I can avoid. Am I carefully avoiding the 10 offenses with every thought, with every word, and every deed? Of course, that's being reactive, but the best way is to be proactive, you see. We should have a proactive approach. If I say, well, you know, I'm being careful not to commit any offenses just by avoiding the devotees' association as much as possible, so I don't make any offense. But no. The real thing we should do is we should cultivate deep, sweet, loving relationships with all the devotees. See? If in my heart, in my mind, I'm always, even if I'm not with the devotees, just like we meet some devotees and they're on the other side of the world, but what I try to do is I try to always think about the wonderful qualities of all the devotees, even if they have so many faults, which we all have our faults, good and bad qualities. But try to appreciate this devotee has this wonderful quality, that wonderful quality. We should always appreciate the wonderful qualities of the devotees. Of course, it is the duty of the seniors to correct the juniors. But the senior, he's really senior and really qualified to correct the junior, then he's actually appreciating and worshiping the good quality of that devotee. The only person who's really qualified to correct someone is that person who deeply loves and appreciates them for their good qualities and wants to help them make their good qualities even more predominant. So anyway, the real reason that we're not making advancement is that the main thing is we're not properly associating with each other. The real meaning of ISKCON is not the buildings, it's not the bank accounts, it's not the corporate charters. The real meaning of ISKCON is the loving relationships we have with each other. If we don't have loving relationships with each other, this movement's dead. There is no ISKCON. It's a shadow ISKCON, a Maya ISKCON. Just like the Maya Sita was actually the one kidnapped, but not the real Sita. The real ISKCON is the loving relationships we have with each other. That is the real ISKCON. You see? It's that love all filtering down from Srila Prabhupada. When we connect with that love filtering down from Prabhupada and we share that love with each other, you see, that's ISKCON. So if someone is not really, you know, finding that awakening of Krishna consciousness within their heart, it means they're remaining on the platform of Nishta Adhikari. By not learning how to have deep, meaningful, loving relationships with the devotees. That's Madhyam Adhikari. He knows how to love the devotees. He knows how to appreciate the devotees. And until we come to that stage, there's no question we're going any higher. If someone may sit aloof thinking, you know, I'm a great Uttam Adhikari sitting in a solitary place. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati condemns that mentality. Mind, what sort of a demon are you to think that you're a great Vaishnava sitting in a solitary place? Our actual advancement is seen by how much I love the devotees. Because there's no question of loving Krishna unless you love the devotees. So that is how we will see our progress in Krishna consciousness. The more that I can feel genuine love and appreciation and respect for all of Prabhupada's followers, especially. Of course, all living entities. A devotee, a genuine, someone who is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, even if appreciates a little ant. He offers his respects even to the little ant or a dog or even a cow eater. Devotee sees everyone as qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the real problem we have is we really haven't learned how to love each other properly yet. That's why our society is struggling in so many ways. So many things, divorce, child abuse, what is this? Why is it coming? Because we haven't learned how to properly love and respect the devotees of Krishna. Remaining Kanishta Adhikari, selfish mentality. But if we can come out of this selfishness and realize we're only shooting ourselves in the foot by this, you know, self-centered me-ism. We're not hurting anyone except ourselves. We can realize how stupid it is and we can do something about it. Get those shoes out. Get that broomstick out. Remind ourselves, don't be selfish. Don't be puffed up. Don't be foolish. Try to do everything in a way that Srila Prabhupada be pleased with every thought, every word, and every deed. Be pleasing to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, to my spiritual master and to the devotees. So anyway, I'm going to go on too long. I've probably gone over time already. So anyway, I wanted to thank you all very much once again. And Srila Prabhupada ki jai, antara srimad bhagavatam.